Welcome to the Building Your Dream Career podcast with 3Skills co-founders, Toby, Josh, Marianne, and Anissa.
Welcome to How I Build My Career. I am your host, Anissa Stoli, and today I have with me tech leader, author, and coach, Leah Garvin. Leah is the author of Unstuck, Reframe Your Thinking to Free Yourself from the Patterns and People That Hold You Back, where she leans into nearly 10 years of experience working in some of the most influential companies in tech, including Microsoft, Apple, and Google, to explore the power of reframing in order to overcome common challenges found in the modern workplace. Leah, welcome.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I think this will be a great conversation. And let's just get into it. So, yeah. Of course, the introduction spoke for itself, but you have worked for some of the largest tech companies like Microsoft, Apple, and Google. And, you know, you've had roles like design producer at Apple, senior design program manager at Microsoft, and senior team operations lead at Google. These all sound incredible. Your resume is just speaking for itself, but can you tell us how you even got into tech and more specifically into such incredible companies?
Yeah. Growing up in the Bay Area, I had a lot of exposure to tech as a thing, I would say, from a young age, and I had been interested in it. I ended up studying sociology in college. So it goes to show it never, it's not that prescriptive of the path. And then doing a number of different kinds of jobs after college. And I actually got into tech through working in at Bank of America in the back office technology. So financial institutions, larger ones at least, have sort of different technology groups. Front office works in sort of like trade entry and the systems that we see when we log on to the bank. Middle office is sort of processing, and back office is the technology architecture. So it's like way, way deep. So I worked in that group. And that was the first time I got exposed to project program management, and right away really liked that kind of work. It actually sort of came from a temp role that I was doing, and that turned into a bigger thing. So that's actually the first way I got in, was through a temp position, actually. And in this role, working in a technology group as a non-engineer, I found that there was actually some just intuition and interest and sort of understanding of human interactions and team dynamics that I could bring to the group and really add value in a different way than having to be an engineer and bringing in that background. Now, fast forward many years later, when I started working in big tech, I sort of had to re-overcome this imposter experience again as a non-engineer working in these engineering companies. But I think it sort of this early win of being able to work in a team and figure out how to bring people together around common goals, leaving the technical expertise to the technical architects I was working with, but bringing in my own interest, which was how to help people work effectively together, how to have people figure out how to communicate what they're doing, get visibility to leadership, help connect the dots between, I think some, what was happening in the team I was in was they were sharing really detailed updates. Leadership wanted just kind of like the elevator pitch and kind of having how to bridge that gap. So, the way I got started was working in a at the time it wasn't like fintech wasn't really a thing. So finance was looked at as very different than technology. Now they're a lot more integrated, but a technical team and a non-technical, in a non-technology company.
Hey, that's actually really interesting, because a lot of our listeners happen to be professionals who are currently growing in their careers, or they're unfortunately maybe in a role that's not fulfilling to them, and often look into pivoting careers. So, you know, hearing your experience going from a non-technical background into a highly technical company, and overcoming, you know, you mentioned imposter syndrome even briefly earlier. How would you say that went? Like, what was your inner monologue and what did that look like on a practical side of things? Like, how did you overcome that essentially?
Yeah. I think in this first role that I was speaking about, I didn't even, it didn't show up as much for me there as it did later when I joined larger tech company. I was a lot younger. I didn't really think about, I was like, I'll just figure it out. I had a little bit more of a brazen attitude around it. When I moved into working in larger organizations, I think right away I felt like I didn't know enough. Should I, I kind of had these like, should I have gone into, computer science, or should I have done this or that? Or I think it was sort of being in a somewhat almost a mid-career and feeling like I wasn't like at the place I should be in, maybe. And that caused a lot of those feelings of, I don't want to ask questions, or what if people think I'm dumb, or people going to think, what do I bring to the table, and everything like that. So all the standard imposter kind of relatable questions that we all have, right? What started to help me work through it, and I'll say, anytime we're in a new situation or a new challenge, these feelings can come up again. So I think it's always something that we kind of keep working on an ongoing basis. But what helped me work through it was really starting to lean back into, what are the unique things that I bring into the table? And I would say, this is also something I recommend to folks looking at a career pivot, which is thinking about, what are my superpowers? What are the things that I both do really well, but also really enjoy doing? Because I think that's kind of when we get into a flow state where it really comes second nature, and we just sort of are fully in our element, really present when we're doing that. And I started to think about, well, what were the things that were going well in my career? What were the wins I was having? What was I getting positive recognition around? And these were things around this work I was doing with team dynamics, of helping bridge communication gaps, like I talked about, helping people get beneath the surface of why things weren't getting done. People weren't working fast enough or didn't have the skills. No, it was often that there was interpersonal issues that were going on, or people weren't, roles and responsibilities weren't clear, or someone kept raising issues, but they weren't being heard. I think that's like psychological safety is often an issue that comes up on teams. So when I started working on those kinds of things, I would end up having the teams I was supporting, and from the operations standpoint, would work faster, higher quality, be getting things done. And then I could point to these interpersonal qualities I was working on as having direct impact on the product teams and on the business. And I think it was sort of doing the exercise of thinking about, how is my work supporting the goals of this team and this organization, and really connecting the dots. That really helped quiet my imposter feelings, because I saw the connection and I saw, hey, this person brings this skill and I bring this one, and they complement each other, and together we're going to make a great team. And so again, moving back to pivoting careers, I think that's the same exercise we do, is thinking about, what are some of the wins I've had? What are some of the experiences that I've been most successful in? What do I enjoy doing? And starting to tease apart, what are some of the qualities that I want to bring to my next role? Even if, I've been working in sales and I want to work in, design now, well, those might feel very different, but problem solving, communication, connecting the dots across people, these are all things that we can bring to any kind of environment. And when we identify what really connects best with us, then we can make sure we're utilizing those same skills in whatever we do next.
I love that. And that doesn't only help someone necessarily change careers, but that can also serve as a backup for you to grow into your current career and get a promotion, as you learn to better communicate your strengths, right?
Exactly. And this is something I talk a lot about in my book, which is, and something I do a lot of coaching and mentoring around, which is helping people tell the story of their work and advocate for their work. Because like you say, when we're wanting to show we're ready for the next challenge or ready for a promotion, we need to have our own story figured out so that somebody else can advocate for us. And I think a lot of times we get stuck in a pattern of feeling like a couple of things, maybe good work gets noticed, which is not even true. Like a lot of times great work doesn't get noticed because the loudest person often gets noticed, or the person that's sharing, getting their work in front of people gets noticed. So we get stuck in the trap of believing good work gets noticed, or just keep your head down and someone will see it, or, you know, don't be a show off, or no one wants to hear this and nobody cares, right? All these sort of inner critic types of things we start believing. And then our work doesn't get noticed. And then we feel even worse. We feel maybe resentful to the organization or your manager. We feel like, screw it, I don't have a path here, I'm going to move on. And it's because we haven't actually potentially, I should say, done the work to ensuring, are we communicating about our work in the right way? And so same thing with those superpowers. I think it's really important we figure out what is the narrative around my work. Now, this is not making up a story. This is the story, telling the story, connecting the dots of, here is what I do. Here are the skills and strengths that I bring. Here's what I've been able to land. So talking about impact. And then here's why it matters to this team and the organization. Maybe it grew, you know, maybe it created, you know, more sales. Maybe it created higher product quality. It grew the user base. Whatever it is, I think that's the last piece that I think we can also forget when talking about promotion or impact, which is, why does this matter for the company? And to be honest, working on things around inclusion and team dynamics and things, that's been something I've really had to focus on, because there can be a perception that, you know, if it's not core product type of work, then it's not as important. But by connecting the dots, you know, I've been able to articulate, well, inclusive teams where there's psychological safety, those teams have less, you know, mistakes. The quality is higher. They work actually at a faster rate. It all comes back to, okay, so this is something we all really want to have even more than maybe some of the other things that were thought of as important before. And that's on us to tell the story of how, one, what we do, so our narrative, what impact we've been able to land, and then how that connects to what the organization cares about more broadly.
That's really insightful. And I'm curious if you can speak more into how do you create even those opportunities where you get the chance to talk about these, the impact that you've had. You know, a lot of people work in positions where they do have a lot of, provide a lot of value. But like you were saying earlier, maybe no one really notices. How do you, you know, get these opportunities? How do you create these opportunities to even talk to your manager or to your team lead? Do you have any advice around that? Yeah.
That's a great question. And it's such a good point that it's very different in every environment and every situation. Mm. And so I think a few things. I would say, first, not waiting for your manager or someone to notice. So I think, and bringing... I think we can reframe feeling like, am I bragging or sort of bringing up something that I want to hear about into, you know, no, I'm arming them with a vehicle to be able to, you know, advocate for me or helping them look better. If that's it, like, I think if people know when you do well, your manager looks better and then they can leverage that to look, you know, help their own. So I think reframe first is getting our own sort of the way we think about it away from feeling like, oh, I shouldn't say this at all, right? So like mindset. And then from there, I think, you know, genuinely talking about, hey, in a conversation with a manager, I'm really excited about this thing that landed. I'd like to share more about it, right? Like instead of sort of starting with like status report, I did this thing, or feeling like, you know, in a way of like, share, I think sharing excitement can be a really genuine way to share something. Another is to share, you know, to have it in a feedback conversation. A lot of times, you know, it could be tempting to just have a conversation with a manager if you're saying, can you give me some feedback? No, because don't want to do that, because you just opened up to like The infinite realm of possibilities, generally people just pick something off the top of their head. So in a situation like that, also being able to articulate our impact, I like to come with an example and saying, hey manager, I'm working on XYZ thing. I've been able to, you know, have some successes in these areas. So now you're talking about your impact. And then is there any additional feedback you have around this thing? So you plant a seed, you can also demonstrate that you've been reflecting on it and actually making some progress, and then opening the door for other feedback. So that's another kind of sort of way to interject some impact and conversation. Right. I think with other ways are to, in a team, if there's the kind of culture around sharing out or teaching, sharing something with peers and saying, hey, I learned this new skill. I want to share how I deployed it. Or I had this great, you know, success with this customer. I wanted to share some of the takeaways that I had from it. Or so I think peer sharing can also be another really nice way where you're not, there's some giving, you're adding value to somebody else and also getting visibility to your work. Those are a few things. And I know that, you know, every sort of role and kind of organization has different sort of, you know, distance from having day-to-day communication with your manager. Maybe we meet with manager once a month, or it's not as, so I think deploying a number of ways to get visibility to your work is important. And I would say if one thing doesn't work, not to rule it out as it's impossible or it's not going to happen, to try it from a slightly different approach, I think is also another way. I think those are some of the bigger ways. You know, if there's opportunity to present in a bigger team meeting, a town hall, then sort of identifying opportunities, raising your hand, even if you're uncomfortable, like public speaking is terrifying for most of us. Sharing your work from a group is scary. It requires more work a lot of times to put something together, a presentation. We don't always have time for that, but it is worth it in those moments where you can get visibility to your work, to share it, to just, you know, jump in the pool head first and go for it. I think that's another one that I would say is look across your team and understand, well, how are other people getting visibility to their work? And then raising your hand for opportunities from time to time. It doesn't have to be every single one, but when moments come up.
That's huge. And it obviously has a lot to play into the confidence that you develop in your workplace, and that can sometimes be challenging even. And yeah. You know, you brought up how your coworkers are doing it, and sometimes you can even be paralyzed by the comparison aspect of things, you know, comparing yourself to maybe a team member who's more outspoken and it's just naturally better at communicating these things. Is there any advice actually that you would give someone who's just paralyzed by that comparison?
Yeah, I think a lot of us get really stuck in comparing ourselves to others, and it can create, like you say, thinking, you know, no one's going through this, or I'm the only one that's struggling with this. And yeah. And we look at people in a meeting or somewhere on social media, we think, oh, it must be so easy. But I think first is to remember, we really have no idea what someone else is going through. I mean, I think there's tons of examples of even celebrities that, like, have shared before they go on stage, they're in an all out panic attack, like having to take, you know, like beta blockers to calm their, they're literally having, you know, high blood pressure, like to the point of having a heart attack. I recently heard Ryan Reynolds said, like, before he walks out onto an interview or something, he is in a full panic, and then something like flips on when he comes out, and they have behind the scene videos where he's like, literally like completely freaking out, someone that you think is so confident, right? So first I think it's quieting the narrative that says you're the only person that's scared, you're the only person that's going through this, because these shame feelings can really only exist. I mean, Brené Brown talks about this extensively. Shame only can exist in our mind once we say it out loud, like the power it has starts to dissipate. So once we say to ourselves, you're not alone at this, we start to say, okay, so I don't have to feel like everybody is waiting for me to mess up. And then the second thing, you know, it's a simple strategy, not, it's a straightforward one. It's not always easy to practice, to be prepared. I mean, I think there's no substitute for being prepared, for thinking through you know, how might I answer a kind of question? What do I want to say if I don't know the answer? I think that can be something that we don't think about as much as we want to have the answers. But there's a really confident way to say, I don't know. And I think it's not by just making something up, you know, and like, and or feeling this, believing the narrative, like you're dumb because you didn't know. And I think we can say things like, that's a great question. I want to check back with my team and make sure I'm answering this the right way. That doesn't make you sound like you don't know anything and shouldn't have this job. And I think it's we put a lot of pressure on ourselves and start comparing, like, oh my God, this person can answer any question. This person, we may not give ourselves credit for how much tenure another person might have, that the meeting actually is focused around something that's really in the vein of this person's expertise versus someone else's. We're also not accounting for, you know, introvert, extrovert, or different sort of learning and processing styles. There's a lot of, for many people, hearing the question and wanting to step away and digest is something that it works best for them, no matter what level of an organization they're at. So I think when we start believing, you know, there's something wrong with me because I can't, and look at how good this person does it, we just get further into that spiral and we get even more stuck. And so I think when we're comparing ourselves, one more thing about comparison that also I talked a little bit about the book is like recognizing when there's actually a signal that you do want to listen to in comparison, because there can actually be there a goal that you want to pursue. So let's say you find yourself comparing yourself to a colleague that's a great public speaker. Maybe it's a signal that, hey, this is something I'd really like to be better at. I see how effective this person can communicate. And so instead of saying, oh my God, they're great, I'm the worst, therefore I'm a loser, saying, oh wow, I can see, like, this sort of comparison has flipped a switch in my mind that, hey, I really want to get better at public speaking. And then instead of just being down on yourself, actually pursuing some skill and development in that space. So I think when we find ourselves comparing, we can also ask ourselves, hey, what's the essence of this? Like, what is it that I want here? And then under the surface, figuring out if there's an unmet goal and then going after that.
That was incredible. Thank you so much for breaking it all down like that. It makes so much sense. And I love the last point that you just made about when you compare yourself and you feel like you're missing something that you see in someone else, that it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. You can turn around that perspective and turn it around in that this can be something that you can work on. I really love that, because then it becomes a healthy feeling as opposed to a negative, like, oh, I'm not as good. I really love that. And I do want to talk about your book, but before, I do want to ask a question. It just makes sense to me to ask this question, because again, a lot of our listeners are currently in the job hunting process or the career pivot process. And, you know, working at some of the big companies that you've worked at, we know that the hiring process can sometimes be very elaborate and very long. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you have any advice in terms of how to take control of the hiring process, or even the the application process. How do you stand out in applying at companies like Google, Microsoft, and Apple?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I can't speak as specifically to the individual companies, but I would say I actually created a video recently on how to kind of stand out in general applying to a role or reaching out to someone on LinkedIn. And there's a couple of things that I would say, which are I use LinkedIn like all the time, and I recommend that to folks all the time for career networking, for, you know, introducing yourself to a recruiter or a hiring manager. I think it is such a powerful place to be able to, you know, make a connection, stand out, make an introduction. So I think starting there is something I found a lot of success with, and folks that I've worked with have found a lot of success there. Now, that doesn't mean just like blasting anyone with the title recruiter, do you have a job for me? And so there's a couple things that I would say when reaching out to someone on LinkedIn, or if you happen to have an email address of a recruiter or something like that, which is start with the subject line. You know, a like do not do would be interested in position in your company. If you're a recruiter, every freaking job, like any email that you get is that, of course, everybody's interested. So first is differentiate yourself in the subject line. So for me, I might say operation manager with extensive experience in tech, looking for operations lead role at XYZ company. Like I literally give you a little thesis sentence in the subject line, because then someone sees, oh, okay. Like I'm looking for these kinds of roles. I will open this up, but interested in job in your company. It's like, no, that's a probably automatic archive. So that's tip one. Second thing is in the email itself. I think I've also seen, and I'm not in HR, I'm not in recruiting, but I've also seen sort of these kind of do not do this and experience it myself. And when folks have reached out to me, which is to say, here, attaches my resume, let me know if there's any jobs in your company I might be a fit for. So if you do this, you're literally asking someone who doesn't know you to like look at your resume, the job website, and sort of cross-reference and find you something. The person's not going to do that. So not to do that, instead to have a job in mind or a few things if they're similar in mind, and saying, based on my background in XYZ things and my successes across these different projects, I am interested in applying for this or these specific roles, so that you make it really clear and you're surfacing the highlights of your resume to the person. I think sometimes folks feel like, well, I'm a generalist. I could do a lot of different kinds of things. And when you're reaching out to a recruiter or hiring manager who potentially wants one specific thing, that can be overwhelming. And so I would say, in your initial conversation, start by focusing a little bit more narrowly on a couple of things to highlight. Because I think you could run the risk of, if you say, I'm interested in design, but I also am an engineer and can also do marketing, their question, you know, they're actually looking for sort of the best person they can find in one of those things. So you may actually, you know, as a generalist, you really stand out, but you may not be setting yourself apart better than the best person in those categories. So you really want to kind of be able to be sort of, you know, compared, you know, one-to-one. And then the last thing I would say is, I think being sensitive in how you close an email pitch about yourself, which is, I think a lot of times folks might say, can I set up time for us to connect next week? Or I will, and I think that sort of presumptive close can be a little bit too like, whoa, I haven't even met you. And that can sort of turn someone off. So I think still wanting to own the next step is totally fine. And I might say, I'll follow up in a few weeks to see. And then from there, you know, and then you maybe follow up one time and let it go. So those are my sort of three tips for reaching out in any organization, big or small, to a recruiter or hiring manager. And again, what you're doing is sort of serving on a silver platter why you're a fit. And I think you can only do that if you are reaching out to somebody directly. So that's why I would use LinkedIn. Oftentimes people put their contact information in LinkedIn, and I would not send them more than one, maybe two emails. I think that's another thing that can get you out of the running, sending someone 3, 4, 5 emails. Like if they didn't write you back after two, just go for somebody else. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah. Yes. The clear ask is so important in these emails. And then, you definitely don't want to give them extra work in helping you connect to whoever it is. So that's really, really good advice. But without further ado, I do want to talk about your book, Unstuck. And it is coming out on April 5th. And yes. I'm curious, what was the inspiration behind it? How did it come to be?
Yeah, so Unstuck is really the culmination of the many years that I've worked in tech and in the corporate world, and looking back on the different situations that I have felt stuck, or folks that I've worked with, or especially across coaching and mentoring women have found. And the book dives into 12 common challenges that show up in the workplace, from feedback to comparison to talking about our work, a lot of the things that we talked about today. And first, why we get stuck. And for women in the workplace, it's often because of these messages and biases and expectations that we have that in many cultures, we've been fed our entire lives. And then we start, our inner critic starts attaching to them and believing them and making decisions based on them. And so first I look at why we get stuck, but then as I was thinking about, well, what is the sort of theme across these different situations, a pattern was emerging where when we were able to overcome them and work through them, like there was a tool that was at the center of that. And that was the power of reframing. We're looking at a challenge through a new perspective. Because in situations like struggling with difficult feedback or overthinking decisions, or like we talked about with comparison, by looking at this challenge through a new perspective, we see that there are so many possibilities that weren't there before, right? Like we talked about with comparison, instead of looking at, oh, I'm comparing myself, I'm not good enough, I should just give up. The reframe is, hey, is there a signal I'm not recognizing in this comparison? And then going after that with something like feedback, feeling like feedback is a criticism, it's something that you did wrong, it's a judgment of you. A reframe is saying, hey, feedback is more of an insight into this other person's preferences than it really says about me. And you, if you think about one, you know, you're the same person in all the situations you're in, and you could ask for feedback from five different people and get five different pieces of information, which further reinforces that, you know, it's a data point. It's about, you know, how your behavior is being perceived by that person. It's not really about you as like a human being. And so again, these reframing is the central tool that I explore across all these different dimensions. And it's about really asking ourselves, you know, what else is possible? What else can I try? And how can I shift my approach to see what other outcomes should become available to me?
That's really interesting. Reframing. It just makes so much sense because, and you know, you're saying that in your book, you do cover 12 common challenges that women face. And how to use reframing to overcome them. It seems like a skill, would you say, that you have to practice?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think we're, you know, if we've been believing these negative or limiting beliefs about ourselves, whether it's, you know, like I said, like I'm not technical enough, or I'm not a good public speaker, or I'm not good enough, I think is probably just a generalized belief many of us have. We have to rewire these thoughts. We have to actually create new pathways to how we think and respond. So yeah, it is a skill to practice. And I think a shortcut to getting there is to really becoming more self-aware of what is the way that we're talking to ourselves? What is our inner dialogue? What's our inner critic telling us? What are the questions we're asking ourselves? Oftentimes we get into a why me, why did this happen, why? And it's like this sort of judgment zone. And in this book, Change Your Questions, Change Your Life, the author Mary Lee Adams says this judger pit. You can imagine like it goes down and down and down based on the questions we're asking ourselves. But if we ask ourselves, if we shift the questions to what did I miss? What's possible? Bring in empathy. What might be going on for the other person? We see it's not really about us. And I think that's really the theme of reframing in general, is we sort of attach, and the ego is another chapter I have in the book, but we attach to all these things happening to us or being about us. And when we ask, we frame the question differently, we see we can look at these challenges objectively outside of ourselves. Yeah. And as things to just shift on a slightly different degree, and we see there's more possible there. So yeah, as you asked, it's definitely a skill to build, and it's really closely linked, I think, to self-awareness and mindset, and to being really in tune with the kind of that inner narrative.
Mm-hmm. See, I wanted to bring one more thing, and we're almost on time here, but you know, there's so much, there's like in this day and age, there's information overload. And,
yeah.
You know, I find myself scrolling through TikTok, and I came across a video of someone who said, you know, that in the workplace, women with kids come at the bottom of the in terms of importance to the employer. Women with kids come at the bottom of the list. Then it's women without kids. Then it's men who are single. And then it is at the very top of the list, it is men with children. Mm-hmm. And that kind of taps into a little bit of a different insecurity in a way. It goes beyond your inner thoughts and taps into the biases that might be found within the workplace. Yeah. How do you, and I'm not sure if this is even the right question to ask, but how do you reframe biases that are often brought up for women, POC, and anyone out there who might be experiencing them or hearing them left and right?
Yeah, it's a great question, great point. I mean, like you said, reframing is the tool for how we deal with the part that is in our own control. Now, I think that's paired with fighting against the bias, trying to help people rethink. And a lot of the work that I've done throughout my career around inclusion is about how to operationalize behavior change and bring awareness to these things. I mean, even talking about, I'm guessing that TikTok video was about how like ridiculous it is that someone that has like, you know, they both have kids and like why it's so different. I think, you know, using the concept more broadly, it's just reframing, I would say, asking people to think differently about the things they already think and believe and know in workplace culture and become aware of the realities that folks face across any different dimension. I think a lot of that within teams relies on shifting a lot around team norms, how decisions are made, how things are communicated, the way in which people are involved.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that's a way to start. I think that's the tool I've used to operationalize behavior change is by making it really clear of how to do it. Because I think, especially when you talk about things like diversity, inclusion, equity, belonging, even people that are very bought in, like, and want to make a change and want to do better and want to, they say often, and whether people think this is okay or not, but oftentimes they say, I just don't know how, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so knowing that something that comes up, I always like to share a lot of really clear examples, things like what you just shared, saying, hey, here's a reality around how people are perceived in the workplace. I think sometimes people are shocked to learn things like that. When I think for many of us, we already know that that's our experience. And we're like, yeah, surprise. It's not the case, right? I mean, this is something that I live with every day. And so bringing awareness and then not, you know, necessarily giving someone a playbook, but giving examples of the types of things that they might do differently or might try. And I think looking at first, same thing with teams and organizations, being more self-aware and looking at, hey, we want to make this environment, we want to make whatever's next for workplace culture, hybrid, whatever, distributed, we want to make it better for everyone. And that means re-examining probably, you know, kind of everything soup to nuts, potentially, or major things about our companies and how we operate. And being open to learn and be proactive and do that work, not just waiting for someone to teach it to you, but like everybody within organizations has responsibility to learn about the experiences of others, of women, like you say, people of color, different ages, people with disability, like all of the different things of what is that experience and how can I be a better ally? How can I take action to make everybody's experience better?
I love that. So before we close, I wanted to ask you, you know, your book is called Unstuck. For anyone who's currently feeling stuck in a role, in a career, what are your advice for them?
My advice would be whatever is going on today is likely not the end of the story. And so when we feel stuck, a lot of times we feel like, this is it. This is me forever. This is, you know, this is all I'll be or have or be able to do. and saying, honestly asking yourself, what else can I try, will start to give you more, because it implies that there is more to try. It implies that you are going to take agency and ownership and accountability for making a change and doing something differently. And I think, you know, it's when we get stuck, it's we don't have to change ourselves. We have to change our approach. Like, that would be the thing to take away and say, okay, I was rejected, or I messed this thing up, or I didn't get this thing. How can I change my approach for next time? Because when we change our approach, we get a different outcome. So that's what I would suggest. And yes, and it seems it can be hard to think about, but even really subtle shifts and small fine tuning can make a huge impact on the outcome that we have.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Leah. And this was such a good conversation. I can't wait for our listeners to get to hear it. Again, Leah's book, Unstuck, comes out on April 5th. And where can we get it?
Yeah, so to learn more about me, the book, things I'm working on, check out leahgarvin.com. Mm-hmm. The book's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, available for pre-order now, or in stores on April 5th. I mentioned my YouTube video. So I have a YouTube channel on YouTube called Reframe with Leah. And I share a lot of shorter videos that dive into a lot of these different concepts, or on Instagram at leah.garvin.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Building Your Dream Career. If you got some value out of this, feel free to share it with someone that might need it. Or you can leave a 5-star rating on the podcast. Visit the3skills.com for free resources to help you build your dream career. See you next time.